Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, sometimes you see news that makes you smile, and when you think about it even a little bit longer, you kind of saw it coming. And the news that's surprising a lot of people today is that after six terms, Montana Democratic Senator Max Baucus, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, is announcing that he will not be running for re-election in 2014, which is great news for Republicans because he's virtually unbeatable in Montana. And now we've got a shot at picking up that seat, which is great news. But in just the last couple days, we had this quote, which we talked about late last week, about Max Baucus questioning Kathleen Sebelius about the president's health care law.
I just see a huge train wreck coming down. And you and I have discussed this many times, and I don't see any results yet. I just see a huge train wreck.
Also last week, Max Baucus voted against approval of the Toomey Mansion background check bill, and when asked why, he simply said Montana. So, Jim, this was a guy who I think knew several days ago that this was going to be the exit plan.
Well, there's a couple strange wrinkles to that. First is that while he had won with like 70% of the vote last time, so this is a guy who clearly had, you know, figured out how to run as a Democrat in a deep red state, there were some folks who said that he looked pretty vulnerable for this this cycle. I think it was Ramesh Padura who observed that if he had run this year, it would have been the first time he was running in a midterm with a Democratic president. So the idea being that maybe he had been able to kind of blur the distinctions or his association with the Democratic Party as a whole. Secondly, his vote on the gun bill now looks even more surprising. Here he is, you know, not running for re-election. And you have to assume this isn't something that he woke up this morning and made this decision. Chances are he was probably thinking of this before. And knowing that he was never going to face the voters again, he still voted against Toomey Mansion, meaning that, you know, I think gun control advocates are kind of walking around in a daze today, concluding that, wow, it wasn't just out of political pressure. It wasn't just that it wouldn't play well back in his home state. He genuinely didn't think Toomey Mansion was a good idea. And they're, you know, just that's just beyond the realm of comprehension for them. Some Republicans a little wary about this. They now think that Governor Brian Schweitzer is going to run for the seat instead. Mm-hmm. One of the things really interesting is that Brian Schweitzer is every bit the critic on Obamacare that Baucus is, or that Baucus is lately, I guess I should say. He too is pro-gun. He too is, you know, a red state Democrat. It's the idea that, you know, and so you have Democrats basically, you know, right after Toomey Mansion and saying that this is the line in the sand and, you know, they are now going to do everything they possibly can to elect a governor who probably would have opposed Toomey Mansion as well. And it would be kind of fun to see when that question gets put to Brian Schweitzer. If you were in the Senate and Toomey Mansion came before you again, would you vote for it or against it? My guess is he'll probably say he'd vote against it. And, you know, then Democrats have to, you know, move heaven and earth to try to elect a Democrat who would not have voted for, you know, one of Obama's highest priorities. Schweitzer also has this kind of strange personality. My favorite quote, one you'll be hearing a lot more of if he decides to run for Senate, is about a year ago when he said, "I'm not goofy enough to be in the House, and I'm not senile enough to be in the Senate." Well, Greg, senility has finally kicked in, so it's Schweitzer for Senate 2014. So yeah. We'll see if that you'll hear a lot of Republicans looking at this as a interesting prospect. You could argue the wind is at the back for Republicans. It's Montana. They're all going to be pretty darn conservative. The Senate map gets a little more interesting with each passing month, it seems, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's a midterm year, so that should bode a little bit better for the Republicans as well. So on to the bad martini. And I've never heard of this woman, Jim, but her name is Amanda Palmer. According to Breitbart News, she's a singer with a group called the Dresden Dolls. She recently wrote a poem trying to help us all empathize and identify more with Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the surviving bomber of the Boston Marathon. And here's a couple of thoughtful quotes from Ms. Palmer. "You don't know how it felt to be in the womb, but it must have been at least a little warmer than his. You don't know how intimately they're recording your every move on closed-circuit cameras until you see your face reflected back at you through the pulp. You don't know how to stop picking at your fingers. You don't know how little you've been paying attention until you look down at your legs again. You don't know how it's possible to feel total compassion in one moment and total disconnection in the next moment." So, Jim, clearly, somehow our society let this poor kid down, and that's why he lashed out.
Yeah. There once was a jihadi from Nantucket. I'll let people fill in the rest there. Now, the reason I picked this for the bad martini, I'm going a little off color today, Greg. this is clearly an attention whore. This is clearly someone who is desperate for attention in any possible way and doesn't care if she stirs outrage. In case you're who is this Amanda Palmer woman? She gave a TED talk a little while ago, which was all about the value of asking people for things. And she talked about her time as a street performer and how she had, had this Kickstarter campaign, raised about $1.2 million for a solo album. And people were saying, hey, wait a minute. You can release an album for a lot less money than $1.2 million. So what is she doing with all that money that's floated in from there? So she already had kind of this strange controversy surrounding her. And now she comes along with this, hey, look at me, Greg. I can empathize with this person who put a bomb next to a kid and blew him up and maimed hundreds of people around him. This is all very predictable. We kind of see this. Every time something terrible happens, there's somebody who has to be a contrarian, somebody who has to say, well, all of you are angry at this bad person, but you see, I'm more sophisticated than that. I'm more intellectual than that. I'm smarter and better than you. So I'm actually worrying about what is Baby Bomber feeling right now. On the one hand, why does this work? Talking about this, you and I look at this and say, this is ridiculous. We have to, point out what a lunatic this chick is being. But at the same time, there's this sense of why does it never cross her mind or anybody else's mind of, I as much as I want attention, I'm just not going to go there. Would she write a poem for Hitler? Would she write a poem about Stalin and the Gulag? Is there anything in which this world is so abominable? You like to think that, little brother bomber, putting that bomb next to that child would be enough to get you to say, okay, this guy is irredeemable. There is no way of understanding or forgiving or anything like that. She clearly knew this would hit a nerve. It's kind of bothersome to see some folks on the internet saying, oh my goodness, this is so thought-provoking and such fantastic art, et cetera. It's somewhat reassuring to see the likes of Gawker and Salon calling it the worst poem ever. But it seems like a very predictable pattern to this. And you kind of wish that, like, when something terrible was happened, that there was no avant-garde, counterculture soul who needs to stand up and basically say to all of us, your emotional reaction of sympathy for the victims and anger at the perpetrators is totally wrong. I mean, I guess her next poem will be, blaming Martin Richard for having the audacity to stand next to that bomb. Anyway, as you can tell, Greg, this is the bad martini because it just got me frothing at the mouth, probably giving this woman more attention and energy and focus than she deserves, I guess.
I hadn't heard of her before today, and I'm perfectly content to not have heard of her tomorrow. So on to martini number two now, and she's obviously crazy, but the official crazy today. Welcome back, Chris Matthews. He was had a couple of guests on yesterday talking about the official charges being filed against Tsarnaev, one of whom was former FBI profiler Clint Van Zandt, who is a fixture on MSNBC during events like the search for the Boston bomber. Matthews says, well, we've got crazy people out there. We've got birthers and we've got truthers. And so what really do we need to know more about this case than just what is in the indictment, that he used a weapon of mass destruction and caused a whole bunch of mayhem, death and damage? And Clint Van Zandt was trying to explain why that's important. And Matthews comes in with just a gem here.
The pieces we don't have, Chris, are where was their inspiration? Where did they get the guidance?
Yeah.
Who taught them how to build the bombs? Where did they build them?
Why is that important? Why is that important to prosecuting? Is that important to prosecuting? I mean, what difference does it make why they did it if they did it? I'm being tough here, but I don't know whether when you look at all this evidence.
No.
Go ahead.
No, it's important to the case because we want to make sure there aren't others that should be prosecuted.
I'm sure if it had been a right-wing extremist, as Matthews had been suggesting up until the point where we actually knew who did it, or at least we think we know who did it, that I'm sure he wouldn't have cared about motivation at all.
I'm going to give Chris Matthews a molecule of the benefit of the doubt, that perhaps he was strikingly inarticulate, that in a bit like my reaction to the poet in the previous martini, I don't really care to understand what drove this person? What was going through their head? What were they feeling? Any of that kind of stuff. However, we do care very much about, like, if there was a particular imam who said, you got to go bomb Americans, well, gee, we want to hear about that. Whether they ever had, like, personal face-to-face contact when the older brother was over in Chechnya, or whether it was just over the internet, if they read a book, if there was something that kind of made this person say, hey, I'm going to be from just this, your general angry young man, and I'm going to actually, move beyond, mere expressing disdain for America to actually trying to blow people up. Well, yeah, we really do want to know what the what that was. We want to know, you know, the same way that the teaching of Osama bin Laden was relevant to the investigation of the 9/11 hijackers. This is part of forensics. This is part of putting together the complete picture so that you can beat these guys and prevent the next attack. I suppose it's theoretically possible that Chris Matthews was expressing his, you know, oh, I don't really care what motivated these guys. I just want to see them brought to justice. But you can't help but get the feeling that what they were going to find, and what already some preliminary reports have indicated, was what motivated these guys was radical Islam. I think you and I had discussed this from probably like Tuesday or Wednesday of last week, before they actually caught them or showed the video of these guys, that if you're this anti-government militia type, you tend to bomb government sites. You know, bombing the Boston Marathon doesn't say, I hate the government. Bombing the Boston Marathon says, I hate Americans. And so militia movements, for all of their flaws, and Lord knows they've got, you know, they got plenty of crazy to go around, they don't generally blow up American people. Their idea is that they want to win over the American people against the big, mean, scary government that's got black helicopters flying over their house, et cetera, et cetera. The jihadists, though, hate all of us. And the jihadists, this is their MO, to blow up as many of us as possible in public spaces using simultaneous bombs. You can't help but look at Matthew's comments and basically conclude he's afraid of what he's going to find if we look too closely at these guys' motives. And then in the end, they went from being your garden variety Muslims to being radical Islamist Muslims who believed in jihad and believed the best way to express their religion was by blowing up lots of people. As uncomfortable as that makes a whole bunch of folks, that is a real, you know, issue that law enforcement and our intelligence agencies cannot help but work around. If you are a radical Islamist, you are more likely to blow up people than if you are a radical Quaker or a radical of any one of a whole bunch of other religions. When he talks about there's plenty of crazy, there's birthers and truthers. I mean, some of you could say some of the proposals from Donald Trump's have been bombs. But truthers drive me crazy, but I don't think they've ever tried to kill anybody, as far as I know. The Constitution protects your right to be crazy, more or less. You can espouse any crazy idea you want. It's once you start deciding my crazy beliefs require me to fill nails into a pressure cooker and set it up to explode, well, then it's, you know, then your motive really does matter a whole bunch. So can't help but suspect in light of this comment from Matthews and a couple other MSNBC hosts that there are a whole bunch of people who, now that the motive appears to be radical Islam as opposed to anger at the government or, you know, pro-lifers or opposition to healthcare or any of these other traditional right-wing boogeymen, that basically they really don't want to look too hard because they're afraid of the answers they're going to find, which is that, hey, if you're a Muslim and you're a really diehard, you know, religious Muslim, there is a possibility that some imams and some leaders are going to steer you in a direction that points you towards terrorism.
Not a surprise from Chris Matthews, but once again, needs to be pointed out. Jim, we'll talk to you on Monday. Talk to you then.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. He'll be out till Monday, but I'll be back tomorrow with another great colleague from National Review for the next Three Martini Lunch.